United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Welcome to the Seminary Explores. I'm your host, Don Redman, and with me today is Mark Jaubert, the director of Bakewell Farms. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
So why don't we just start out by you telling us briefly what Bakewell Farms is?
Yeah, and it's Bakewell Farm, and it started maybe about 3 years ago as an idea. I was thinking ahead. I was wanting to move away from retail baking. I had already sold my cafe, Pomona's, in Biglerville, and now it's become Fiddler & Company. Sold the real estate as well. So I was kind of shedding things and looking ahead and thinking about what maybe my next step would be. I knew I wanted to continue baking, so that was a really important thing. So I was really looking toward kind of removing the retail layer of what I was doing as a baker and as a bakery owner, and kind of return to some teaching roots that go back back when I taught art and right out of college. So the teaching aspect of Bakewell Farm is really a core thing. I like to use the term bread-centric, so that all the programming and things that we're conceiving to do with Bakewell Farm is really centered on bread. So that is the core of what we're doing with Bakewell Farm at this point. There's various programs that are maybe somewhat still on paper, but we're beginning to roll things out. We just built a wood-fired mobile bread oven, and I can elaborate more on that. On you know why did we decide to go mobile and as opposed to a bricks and mortar kind of thing, literally a bricks and mortar thing, you know, with a bread oven. So. So that's well on its way. I'm learning how to use it, and then we're putting together classes. Primarily, I'm teaching through the Arts Council.
Okay. Well, let's back up a little bit first before we get too into the details of the farm itself, and let's talk a little bit about your journey to this point. And many of our listeners may or may not know that you've been a fixture in the Gettysburg bread scene, so to speak, for many years. How did you get introduced to bread? I would say as a calling.
As a calling, yeah. It didn't start out as a calling, certainly. It was almost a reaction to a point in my work back in Maine. I'm originally from Maine. I had a graphic design business. I was sitting at a desk at a computer, and I was wanting something. I was getting restless. I wanted to have a much more physical kind of relationship with my work. A friend of mine at the time had started up a bread bakery, wood-fired, sourdough, home-based, very small kind of cottage home industry, if you will. And I was really intrigued by that. I grew up in a French-Canadian family. And my mom was a terrific cook. You know, I mean, she. Now that I think back, it's like she was really using like classical French cooking technique. And of course, being a kid, I didn't really pay attention and appreciate that she was, you know, constantly making sauces. And she'd start with a mirepoix and all the things that you think associate with in French cooking. So I already had an interest and love for cooking. So after seeing what my friend was doing with the bread, I thought, "Wow, gee, how difficult can bread baking be? It's three ingredients. If you do it sourdough, I mean, literally, it's flour, water, and salt because you actually cultivate your own leaven. So I said, I'm going to try this, you know, and then naively." It was a heck of a journey, put it that way, because it's a very dynamic thing. You're working with living substance. Sometimes I joke around and say that I'm a micro farmer because I'm cultivating these small microorganisms, bacteria, if you will, that is responsible for leavening and making a dough and fermentation. So you get this whole layer of science, which is very fascinating. And I know just enough to to be dangerous, let's say, or at least explain the processes of what's happening, what you don't see, and then there are all the other aspects to it that you can see. So you know, that was my introduction to bread. But it came from a degree in art. I have a BFA in painting. Then right out of college, I had the opportunity to teach in a private school and teach art and become part of that faculty for 3 years. And then I moved on. I also played music. So I have a love for music. I play guitar. So I was, doing that for a bit. And then I came back to my art vis-a-vis the Macintosh at the time, which was that tiny little toaster, you remember, the 512. And, we were kind of on the cutting edge or bleeding edge of technology at that time with the Apple Macintosh. So I got involved with graphic design, from my art education, let's say. So then that's when I moved on to making this decision about doing something a little bit more physical, working with dough and bread and ovens and whatnot. And it's been a great process. So as far as a calling, I'd have to say that it feels more like a calling now that I'm bringing this 20 plus years of experience of baking in this community to the point where I can apply it to perhaps a more of a social engagement, and working that angle, if you will, and eliminating the retail aspect of it.
Can you give us a brief summary of your retail experience in the area? Just kind of.
It's been really a single experience of moving to Gettysburg, with some research, realizing there wasn't a local artisan bakery. That was at the time when the word artisan became little bit more trending, if you will, in the world of food. And there was college, the seminary here, the national park, etc. So it was a good community to land in and pursue the baking. So and that's where I took it from, really. So starting from being literally a stranger in this town to making numerous friends and acquaintances, and watching families, bring their children in, and then watching their children. It makes it sound like I'm an old man, but basically, I'm watching their children bringing in and holding their babies in their arms, and that's been, I think, the part that's been the most rewarding, is seeing how bread is a real, a leveler. It really is a way to bring people together. I think food does that generally, but bread seems to be a also very theologically charged as a food, and so that's what's so intriguing about it for me. So
very nice. Very, yeah, nice. We've talked in the past about your interest in slow food. The idea of really taking your time with your food, whether it's in preparation or in eating. And this kind of seems to me like the ultimate slow food experience, because I mean, you're really in some ways trying to get people involved with the whole process, correct?
Exactly.
To understand the process of bread production. So
exactly.
Maybe you could walk us through what it actually takes to make a loaf of bread beyond walking into the grocery store and plopping down $1.25.
Yeah, and that's a very concise question with maybe a much more convoluted answer. So I'll do my best. I know we're limited in time a little bit, but we'll see what.
We'll call this a slow podcast. So just take it easy and just move on as you
need
to.
Okay, great. I appreciate that. I suppose we could start really from a kernel of wheat, and wheat primarily, because wheat as a plant and as a substance used in making bread has been blessed, if you could say, with gluten. And I know there's been so much talk about gluten intolerance and celiac, but the properties of gluten are what makes bread do what it does, in terms of creating a matrix that will hold the gas from the fermentation and raise the loaf. So, but I find it curious. It's like, when did that happen? I mean, there's different theories about when people discovered the sourdough, and that it was somebody leaving a bowl of porridge or grain out. And this is in, in Egypt and the Nile, or whatever. And it came back a couple of days later and realized it was bubbly and frothy, and it had, this really tart taste, and it was interesting. And I guess the next step would the curiosity of saying, okay, let's bake this and see what happens, or whatever. Let's put it in on a flat stone, a hot stone, and bake it. And so there lies the mythology behind, when sourdough was discovered or created. But it is like that. I mean, if you take grain, grind it, mill it into a flour, a whole grain, add water, cover it. And this is how we start create starters, okay? And then allow it to sit for 2-3 days and come back to it. You'll see that it's begun to create form bubbles and begin fermentation. So the next step from there is that, okay, you've captured a culture. And when I got thinking about that, it's like the grain wants to be bread, which is really pretty cool stuff. And then when I thought about that, it's like, well, what is that? And then I came across some reading. I love to read. It was the word telos, the idea of purpose, the aim of the berry. And I think Aristotle, of course, the famous quote is about the acorn wanting to be the oak tree. So my take is that the kernel of wheat wants to be a loaf of bread, or that its aim or purpose is to become bread. That's my take on it.
Okay.
But I think it's pretty cool that kind of ties into that whole concept of telos, or telos. Anyway, so now you have to cultivate this capturing of this bacteria or culture. So you go through a series of selectively feeding it more flour and water, maintaining a temperature. I feed my starter twice a day to maintain a vigorous, what they call a vigorous young culture. You don't want it to let too sour, because then your pH level goes down. See, here's the science part of it, which is in the microbiology of it. And so you continue feeding it, and selectively you select out a certain range of other, let's say, undesirable bacteria, and then you're left with the type of bacteria that contributes the best to leavening the bread. And that's generally lactobacilli and wild yeast, or the yeast that are, again, inherent in the grain. Okay, so it's on the outside of the grain, on the inside of the grain, by adding the water and fermentation, you start activating a lot of enzymes and enzymatic action, like amylase, protease. And then the beauty, with sourdough, is with longer fermentation time, we're talking about slow food movement now, is that after 4 to 6 hours, phytic acid, which is a property of within grains and legumes, that prevents mineral uptake, so you don't get the nutritional benefit. So it's called the bioavailability of what you're taking into your body. So sourdough kind of cancels out or phytase, which is the enzyme that attacks the phytic acid, breaks it down, and all of a sudden you have a food substance that your body responds very well to, and it can uptake those minerals as opposed to having them getting locked up with phytic acid. So again, that's a little side excursion.
Sure,
okay, that's part of meandering that I was talking about earlier. But so now you have this culture, and then it's predictable. You're feeding it fresh water and flour, and it's rising in, let's say, a 6 to 8 hour period. Now you have something to work with. So now that's your leaven. So now you add the leaven to more fresh flour and water. But this time you're also going to add salt. Salt has a couple of things that it does. It does buffer some of the fermentation, slows the fermentation down, because it strengthens or tightens the gluten bonds. So what you have is something that tightens it up so that it moves more slowly. And it's a sensory thing. It's your sense of taste. Tuscan bread is typically made without salt. Very bland. So it's salt has a nice sensory part of it. And typically 2% of the flour weight is what you find in most breads. And it seems to be about the right amount of salt. Mm-hmm. So now you have your salt, your water, and your flour, and your leaven that's made with water and flour. So it's a really minimalist kind of thing. But there's that element of time and temperature. So like when I'm teaching a class, for instance, I always make a point to say, or I throw out the question. So, you know, what goes into making bread? We've got flour, water, salt, maybe some commercial yeast, but you also have, you know, your sourdough leaven. What else goes in? And, you know, people think, well, you can add fruit and nuts and whatnot. I said, no, it's time and temperature. So very critical. I treat them like ingredients that by manipulating the time and the temperature, you can change the profile, the flavor of a loaf of bread. And so they are very integral to the whole process. So as we're moving through there, now we've made the dough, so we let that ferment, and then we divide it, let's say, into two or three loaves, depending on the size of the batch that you intend to make. Shape them into a form, like a boule or a batard. Put them in baskets or between floured folds of cloth. And then at that point, it's called proofing. So up to that point, you refer to it as bulk fermentation. Now it's proofing. So then you're preparing your oven. So in my case at home, it would be your home oven. And I bake in what's called a combi cooker. It's a cast iron vessel. It provides kind of a mini brick oven inside your oven. It's like an oven inside the oven. It holds the steam that's naturally going to release from the dough, and it caramelizes and makes beautiful crusts. It's amazing what you can do with this type of technique in baking in your home oven. And that's what I teach in the classes in terms of sourdough or French bread. So now we're taking it right up to the baking, and you know, you take it out of the oven and it's got color. So you're looking at it. Nice thing about baking is just that you're using all your senses. Okay. Right. It's very integrative that way. And you can use your brain in the sense that if you want to break it down into biochemistry or just the physics of the oven and talk about all that on all those levels, and then talk about kind of the sociological aspect of it or cultural aspects of bread. So it's a pretty deep subject if you want to go there.
And it sounds like there's a lot of experimentation and trial and error involved in this process, because as you're saying, the time and the temperature and, you know, probably I would imagine even humidity on some level.
Exactly.
You know, and you know, what can you bake in the winter versus maybe what is it going to be like in the summer?
Yeah, it boils down to paying attention. You know, it's this kind of. I mean, I know, again, all these different things that seem to be trending, the idea of mindfulness, right? I mean, baking puts you right there, front center. You just cannot not think about what you're doing or think about what's happening in front of you. Another term would be, you know, you're coming, having a beginner's mind, that you're coming back especially teaching. You do it for 20 some odd years, maybe some of it's automatic, but every time you kind of put it on autopilot, there's something there to just remind you that you got to pay attention. Right. And I think of the beauty of the process. It is a process, it's a living process, in that you are working with the sourdough culture. So there's the dynamic there in itself as well.
Well, let's talk about the farm a little bit.
Okay.
And the projects you're doing out there. Yeah. How are things going? You've kind of been doing this for about 3 years, you said.
Yeah, a lot of it's been in my mind and working on paper to simply write out a design, if you will. I'm kind of designing the design as we go along. But initially, it was definitely conceived to be a actual farm, a field-to-loaf experience is what I had in mind, that we could have enough land to grow the grain. And I'm seeing a lot of that happening. It's definitely out there in the wind, along with wild yeasts. It's spreading. And I'm constantly coming across articles about people doing really similar things in different ways, but basically, baking and building community, really. That's appears to be, again, happening all over.
And you, I mean, you have a number of projects you're working on with the farm. Some in more levels of development than others,
Exactly.
And so, you know, just kind of looking at your website and things, one was a bread for BTUs. And I thought that was very interesting.
You know, coming around after a retail experience, and it's been terrific. You know, baking bread for a community and having that exchange in the store. And meeting people that way. I thought with Bread for BTUs, I was trying to figure out a way to create a parity between bread and what it takes to make bread. And could there be a bartering aspect to it? So Bread for BTUs essentially is you show up with an armful of seasoned firewood and get a loaf of bread, because guess what? It takes about an armful of firewood to bake, let's say, two loaves of bread. So that was the initiative there, the concept of saying, you know, let's not monetize this exchange. Let's get cash out of the picture, and how can you make this bread accessible? Because it has been spun in a way in the market and to be this very dear product, and it's baked all over the world in different forms. It's there's this sort of layer of amateurism that I feel is important, that we don't lose sight of that. So Bread for BTUs is a way to create an access to good bread, and something that's nutritious as well. And
That's
Bread for BTUs.
I know the first time I started trying to do some gardening years ago, you realize how much energy goes into producing your food if you're producing it yourself. And so I think to give people that vision of what it actually takes to make this loaf of bread, it's not just these simple ingredients, but there are other things involved. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, you teach classes, you said, through the Adams County Arts Council.
Yeah, they have a wonderful facility there has provided me an environment to teach in. There's an oven and a small kitchen there that is similar to what you might have in your home. I mean, some of the equipment is much more commercialized and hefty. But generally speaking, the demonstrations that I can achieve there are similar to what someone would be able to do when they got home after they get this information and know what the basic tools are. You know, they could do this at home. It's not like you have to. I think if I did the class at the bakery, I mean, certainly if I was teaching other professional bakers, that would be one thing. But for the home baker, creating a similar environment, I thought, was important. So it's been going really well. The classes are starting to change in terms of descriptions. I'm trying to introduce more of the Bakewell Farm concept, Bake Bread, Build Community. As a matter of fact, this Saturday will be our first class. It's sold out. It's a six-hour class, which is the first time I do an extended class, but with sourdough and again now introducing this other layer of engaging individuals to become home community bakers. Is going to take more time. I mean, that's the slow part of it, is you have to really back up a little bit and look at what it's going to take to build a cadre of home bakers that are willing to maybe do it once a week. The recipes yield two loaves, so that second loaf would be donated or shared with a neighbor, brought over to local soup kitchen, food pantry. So the vision is that you have this virtual hearth, you see. Right. So everybody's home is considered a hearth. So wouldn't it be neat that you could have 100 households baking every week, times, let's say, an average size oven is about 3.5 square feet.
That's a large hearth.
That's a big oven.
and you kind of start this process out with the class, because when the class is done, the loaves actually don't go home with the people who took the class, correct?
Yeah, that is true. I mean, there's plenty of sampling, so you don't leave hungry. put it that way. So we do want to share what we're baking and taste it and take in that other layer. I mean, you've got all the sensory aspects of, you know, what things should look like, what they should sound like, even when they're baked, tapping on the bottom of the loaf to know when it's done. But ultimately, you know, as they say, the proof is in the pudding, is to slice into that loaf and look at the texture of the crumb, smell it, taste it, and take in all aspects as well.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time, but I think we want to, another project that you're working on is something you call Bread Core. And I want to discuss that a little bit.
Sure. And this will be a launching of that through the Arts Council as well. So it'll be our first class. It'll be on a Saturday. I don't know if we filled it yet, but it's out there. And it's for teens. I thought it would be an interesting thing to bring bread baking and the idea of baking bread and building community to that age group. I know that in high school, more seniors, or I think it may be even a requirement that there's some sort of civic component to their senior projects, and that they're engaging in some way in their community. So I'm structuring it around that idea that they come in, and it's going to be more oriented to flatbreads and pizza, because I thought, you know, pizza is the ultimate leveler. Right. Everybody loves pizza. So we'll make pizza, and then we'll take the rest of the dough and show them how to roll out, do flatbreads, which can be done on a stovetop. So minimal, you know, equipment is involved. And still also have the opportunity to talk to that age group about what it means to kind of reach out a little bit.
And I would imagine there's a little less time involved in that process, which means you can get them into this idea of baking bread without the long rise times.
Exactly. That would be a yeast-based dough. And I'm beginning to actually rethink the whole sourdough thing a little bit. Because I did a French bread class, and that involves a pre-ferment, which is similar to your sourdough leaven, but you can decide at 6 p.m. on a Friday night that you want bread the next day, and you can make a pre-ferment that has a lot of flavor and make a very beautiful loaf the next day, and there's no sourdough involved. So the ideal is to maybe shoot for sourdough because, you know, again, the nutritional benefits from the much longer fermentation. But you can introduce some levels of fermentation that is suitable and good as well in French bread than using a pre-ferment. So that cuts down on that time as well. Yeah.
Well, it seems like you've been very involved in this process for a while, certainly the bread. And I'm wondering, for you personally, what is the most satisfying part of... that's kind of a wide open question.
It sure is.
Fill in the blank.
Okay, most satisfying. I'd have to say that it's being constantly surprised by what you can get from the process of making bread. And as long as you remain really curious, you can keep going down different avenues that are all related, and so that you tend to integrate all kinds of subject matter. Like I said, I mentioned science and biology and math. I never thought I'd be using a spreadsheet to develop, you know, formulas and new ways to put ingredients together and monitor how, you know, what that means to have, you know, this much flour and maybe this much whole wheat flour, and changing the composition. So the satisfying part is that it's as deep as you want to go with it. It's humbling in that respect too, because again, if you're not paying attention, it will tell you, you didn't consider this. So there is that relationship that's humbling but humble in terms of the ingredients that are involved. So I find that immensely satisfying and intriguing at the same time.
All right, very good. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the Seminary Explorers with Mark Jalbert, Director of Bakewell Farm. If you'd like more information on Bakewell Farm, visit their website at bakewellfarm.org. Mark, thanks for visiting us.
Thanks for having us.
And sharing the story.
Great. Thank you.
have been listening to The Seminary Explores, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.